This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of Real Talk with Zuby is brought to you by our sponsors, OZ Lifestyle Brands. OZ Lifestyle Brands care a lot about the details. Their selection of men's accessories balance style with substance and quality and craftsmanship, showcasing both casual and classic designs. They also make shopping really easy for you. You can just go check out their website, ozlifestylebrands.com. They've got a fantastic selection of watches, wallets, t-shirts, and other accessories, especially designed for men with ultra-discerning tastes. OZ is for men who have found their calling but don't feel the need to shout about it. So I recommend you go check out their full range of products over at ozlifestylebrands.com. To let them know that I sent you and to get 20% off your entire first order, just use the code ZUBYMUSIC at checkout. That is ZUBYMUSIC, Z-U-B-Y music, at checkout to get 20% off your entire order at ozlifestylebrands.com. ozlifestylebrands.com. Go check them out. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a YouTuber and comedian who goes by the name of Count Dankula. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, dude, man. It's good to be here.
Awesome. So what do I call you? Do I call you Count? Do I call you Dankula? Do I call you Mark? How do we do this?
I'm still trying to decide that myself. I'm not really sure. Like, some people just sort of choose whatever they prefer. Like, most people call me Marcus.
Marcus, okay. Okay, cool. We'll stick with Marcus. But to everyone else, you can call him Count Dankula. Show some respect. Awesome, man. So first of all, where did that name come from, actually? What's the source of that?
I was making, you know, a lot of people make sort of like a stupid meme YouTube accounts where they just upload random memes and stupid content. I was making something like that, and I actually turned around to my girlfriend and said, "What is a stupid sounding meme name for a YouTube channel?" And she was the one that actually went, "Count Dankula," and I went, "Yeah, that sounds stupid. Yeah, I'll use that." You know, little did I know it was going to become popular, and I can assure you, if I'd have known it was going to be popular, I would have chosen a better name.
That's funny. So it was just totally random, just a suggestion?
Yeah, completely random, just okay. Thought of in like 30 seconds. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough, man. And when was that? When did you start your YouTube channel?
It was in like 2015. I think it was like August 2015, and it was just random stupid things I uploaded on it. You know, me and my friends would make stupid videos, and we would just put them up on the channel.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was what it was at first. I only had like 8 subscribers back then, and it was my friends that I knew. Wow. That I knew.
And now you're on well over 500,000, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some serious growth, man. So congratulations on that. What I wanted to do was actually go back a little bit and find out more about Marcus the person, you know, find out more about your life, growing up, all that. I find with a lot of interviews, they kind of jump straight to, I don't know, jump straight into 2017 and kind of carry on from there. But it's like, you know, I take it you grew up in Scotland. We're hearing that lovely accent coming through right now.
Yeah. I grew up in Coatbridge in Lanarkshire. That's where I grew up. I only moved out of there a few years ago. But that's where I spent, moved there when I was a baby. So born and raised in Coatbridge, which was a hell of an upbringing. You know, I know how to fight.
Tell us a little bit about your childhood, man.
It was just sort of in Coatbridge, there was nothing to do. We've got, there's like two things in Coatbridge. One of them is called the Time Capsule, which is sort of like a really bad version of a water park. And I'm pretty sure they discover a new strain of bacteria in there every week, you know, so it's valuable to science, but not so much the community. And we also have Scotland's noisiest museum, because it's all about trains and mineshafts, and they've got all the machinery running. And when you get in, it's quite deafening. You know, I'm pretty sure all the staff there have tinnitus, like it's that loud, but they somehow managed to turn it into a selling point. And you go to both of those once, and you've kind of absorbed the experience, so you're left with, you know, nothing else to do for the other 363 days of the year.
Wow.
So it's pretty much a drink and smoke weed. That pretty much sums up the youth at Coatbridge.
Okay, how many people live there?
Used to be 80,000, and then Margaret Thatcher shut everything down.
Oh, wow.
And now it's 40 something thousand, I think.
Okay. Yeah. What, I mean, so what were you like as a child?
A little bit of a rabble rouser. Yeah. You know, I was the class clown. You know, okay. I got punishment exercises a lot, which is like, you know, fill out lines. You know, I will not do this. I will not do that. You know, the Bart Simpson type thing. And I would either be on my computer playing video games and hanging around on the internet, or I would be out in the streets drinking.
Okay, that from was, what age? Yeah. Not to incriminate yourself, but...
Oh, no, it's fine. since I was probably about 14. that was probably since I was about 14. And that even continued into like my mid-20s, still drinking in the street, because I was was a little bit immature.
That's just what people do there.
That is just what people do. Yeah, that sums it up.
That's fair enough, man. And have you got siblings or...?
Yeah, I've got a sister.
Okay. Cool, man. Let's see. So going on from there, what made you decide to start a YouTube channel? I mean, what sort of, so I've seen quite a lot of your videos. I've seen, you know, you do your Mad Lad series where you talk about sort of crazy men who have done crazy stuff throughout history. You've got some sketches on there. You had some stuff, I know, when you got involved with UKIP, and we can get into all those things more, but I'm just curious about your journey from being a young man in Scotland to a YouTuber with over 500,000 and subscribers on YouTube and hundreds of thousands on other social media channels. I mean, what was the process for that, or how did that even happen?
Completely by accident. I didn't mean for things to go this far. It was just basically, I hung around a lot on the internet, seen memes, seen people making, you know, stupid skits and funny videos, and I just thought, oh, that would be quite fun to do. That would be a cool thing. So I'm going to do it too. So I made my channel with no intent whatsoever of taking it seriously. You know, it was made as a joke. The videos were a joke. It was like, I'm not going to dedicate time to this. I'm just going to do this as a little side hobby. And just made some stupid videos, and then obviously made that one video.
the infamous.
Yeah, sort of took off, and I legit didn't expect it to happen. You know, didn't expect to be sitting here with hundreds of thousands of subscribers and doing live events and stuff.
So prior to that, what was your audience like before that video?
Before that video, they were my friends, like my eight subscribers. Nobody was discovering my stuff. Nobody was subscribing. Yeah, I had like eight subscribers who were my friends that featured in the videos. Like it was all them.
Okay. So in a weird way, that video, that catalyst must be sort of bittersweet in a weird way, because in a way it's very much sort of made you, you know, sort of catalyze everything up until now. But I imagine that the whole ordeal, we can get into the details of it more, but the whole ordeal must have been one of those like bittersweet things. Like it's negative in a way, but it's the thing that put you on the radar of so many people who have then carried on watching your channel and have subscribed and realized that, okay, there's more to you than this one silly video.
Yeah, it was life gave me lemons, you know. Yeah. I made lemonade. I couldn't get a job anywhere else, because see, when you're all over the newspapers getting called a Nazi and all that type of stuff, you know, even the local Subway isn't going to want one of your CVs, you know, like they're not going to want to talk to you. And I tried, like, I used to work in security, but see, because I kept getting recognized, You know, I then became the security risk, so I couldn't keep working at these places. And there was loads of places I tried to get a job, and it's happened quite a few times actually, where they either recognized me in the interview and basically said no, not you, or I would get the job, and then after a week, someone at where I was working would recognize me, and then it would get back to the manager, and then I was just shown the door, and that happened quite a few times.
Man, so. Okay, so obviously for anyone who's listening here who's not familiar with it, we do have to talk about the video. I know you've talked about it in a million and a half interviews. So my understanding is you post, you know, I don't even, let me not tell the story. Let me let you tell the story.
Well, it's, my girlfriend absolutely loves our pet pug Buddha, loves the dog more than me. She would always constantly, you know, like when girls like baby talk, animals and all that type of, she would do that like all the time and just constantly go on about how cute the dog was. And then I can remember one day I went to give him a cookie, and he always used to give you a paw, you know, put a paw on your hand and everything. And when I went to give him the cookie, he'd like sort of lifted his paw beforehand, and I laughed and went, haha, that looks like a little salute. And then I kind of had a light bulb moment.
Oh gosh.
And that's when I went, cool, I'm just to really annoy her. You know, I want to make her cute, adorable, little, you know, ray of sunshine, her little adorable baby. I'm going to turn it into the worst thing that I could think of, like to really, really upset her. And that's what I decided to do. And I filmed it, and then I posted it on YouTube because I thought that would be a great idea so that me and my friends could watch the video and laugh. And I was also going to surprise Sue with the video.
Yeah,
I was going to just sort of sit one day and go, I've got this really, really funny video that we should watch, and then sort of dodge the punches after that. But but then it ended up when I was actually going to a gaming convention in Iceland, right? So I got on the plane and went over to Iceland, and I was going to say
the country, right?
Yeah, the country, not the supermarket. I'm much, much, much more of a farm foods man myself. But we ended up, I'm on the plane, I'm traveling there, and it's while I was on the plane, apparently, that someone, to this day, still don't know who, somehow discovered the video, discovered my channel, and posted it on Reddit.
Okay.
And it made it to the front page of Reddit. Oh. And the newspapers were already catching wind of it, but I was on the plane, so I had no signal on my phone. I arrived in a foreign country, so my phone still had no signal. And I met up with my friends and went out and got drunk, not realizing that, you know, back home, my whole life's been ruined.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then the next day, connected to the Wi-Fi, my phone exploded with notifications, and then I get a call from Sue saying, why are the press at the door? They found out where I live, and and then everything just snowballed from there. Oh,
that's crazy. I didn't even know you were out of the country and unaware while that was all blowing up.
No, I'm sitting, you know, drinking in bars in Reykjavik, having a great time, not realizing that I've already been sent an email by my employer telling me I'm fired. Oh, wow. And all that. Yeah,
man. Yeah, that's nuts. Do you think if you'd known, do you think you would have taken the video down, or do you think you would have sort of let it run its course? What do you think you would have done if you'd had a chance?
I know how the internet works. The internet's forever. Yeah. Like, as soon as you post something on the internet, that's it. It's out there. Someone will have downloaded it, and then it will get shared around everywhere. And I'm very aware of the Streisand effect. You know, in your attempts to censor something, it instead diverts more attention towards it. So
the
damage was done.
Oh, fair enough, man. And the original Reddit post, was it, how did they interpret it? What did they think? Were they sharing it like, haha, this is funny? Or were they sharing it like, oh my gosh, this is awful. Look at what this evil man has done.
It was probably about, I would say, you know, 90% people found it funny.
Yeah.
And then there was the 10% that were saying, you know, that's not funny, that's horrible, you know, all that type of stuff. So it was the vast majority though saw the video as a comical video, which is good, because that was the point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to understand the context. Even if someone doesn't have the full story of knowing you were doing it to annoy your girlfriend, it should be, I guess you can't assume anything these days, but you'd sort of hope that even if someone finds it distasteful, even if someone finds it offensive, you'd hope they'd at least get that it's a joke. I mean, it's a pug. It's
yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's not even like it was a was a Doberman. You know what I mean? Some sort of dog that's even some sort of threat. It's like this is clearly the most ridiculous dog you could even do this with.
Well, that feeds into part of the joke because obviously, you know, Nazis consider themselves to be the absolute master race, whereas a pug is a genetic abomination that can't even breathe properly. So, you know, that feeds into the joke too.
Oh man. So talk us through sort of what happened after this. What happens when you land back in the UK?
Well, the entire time that I was in Iceland, my friends were all sort of, you know, messing with me and saying things like, oh, the cops are going to be waiting for you at the airport. They're going to be waiting for you. And that made me a little bit nervous because I thought, oh, God, are they really going to be? Yeah. But then I landed, everything was fine. And then I went home. And then I think it was about 2 days later, I got the knock at the door. Wow. And it was the two plainclothes police officers. And they came in. And they did the whole, you know, I'm sure you know why we're here. Why don't you explain to us what happened? So I said to them, you know, made a funny video to annoy my girlfriend, posted it on the internet, the media caught wind, blah, 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 here we are. And the male police officer just so matter-of-factly went, well, we're here to arrest you. And I just sort of laughed and went, okay, all right then. And then I was like, can I get changed? Because I was in my pajamas.
Yeah.
Right, so then I went in to get changed, but the whole time I've got the male officer like watching me. Like obviously it's to make sure I don't have a weapon hidden somewhere or something like that. So while I'm getting changed, the other officer is going around my house taking pictures of everything in my house, which was strange. I'm not sure why. And then when I get led outside, and this is the thing that was really weird, is my community is a very close-knit community. Everyone knows everyone. If anyone's a stranger, you know, people don't like them being there. Mm. And the press tried a few times in those 2 days to come to my house. But then what happened? But they usually got chased away by the local youths, right? They're not very welcoming. You know, if you're not from here, you're not welcome. Right? But then what happened was, even though there was no press the entire day before, the press were waiting outside, cameras ready for me. And we later found out through certain channels that the police tipped off the press. The police tipped them off, which is actually illegal.
Really?
Yeah, basically the police have to, whenever the police interact with the press, there has to be a written record, a recording of it, of what the police said and told to the press, like an official press statement. And there was none. There was no record was kept. So either, you know, the police broke the rules or the press are psychic and knew the exact date and time of my arrest. So they got some nice pictures of me and then I got taken to a cell and I got kept in jail for a court the next day. Mm-hmm. And then I got released on bail.
Man, I do remember following this at the time and just being very confused as to how on earth is this thing escalated to this level. I mean, that's the weirdest thing about the internet, though, is that you can do something that you, I mean, obviously by putting up a video on a YouTube channel with 8 subscribers, it's not technically private, but the intention is not necessarily like, okay, I'm going to broadcast this to the entire world. It's just strange how something that someone does sort of between a joke between their friends or whatever can draw outrage nationally, internationally. And it's very, very strange. You know, someone will do a bad take on Twitter. And then within the next 12 hours, they're just being dogpiled on by people in all over the world. It's like, man, this was just one person's bad. One person's bad idea. Like it wasn't meant to draw attention from all these, you know, millions and millions of people, and you just get that viral effect and millions of people see. I mean, the video ended up getting how many views the video ended up getting?
At first it was a 500,000.
Okay.
Like that was, I think it got to about 300,000, and that's when it started, you know, kicking off with the press and the media and all that. But then I think it was at about 500,000 that it just gets shared even more, and that's when it properly really went viral. And then in the space of like a few days, it got like 3 million views.
Yikes!
Yeah.
And what did the press say? I didn't, because I don't really buy or nor read newspapers or watch TV. But what, what was their sort of angle?
Oh, they were, this was my first ever dealing with the press. This was before I knew. Yeah, yeah. Lots of many lessons. Because they came all smiles and all happy going, yo, we can see that you're a really nice guy. We just want to hear your side of the story and all that. And I'm like, oh, yes, please, Mr. Reporter, help me. Help me. Like, the guy was like, oh, I just want to help you. And I'm like, oh, yes, please. And it was a total hatchet job. Like, everything I said, they took it out of context. And they were trying to make it look like I was the reincarnation of super ultra mega Hitler. And that's when I was just like, many lessons were learned. I know it now. I don't talk to any press now. Like, even when they reach out to me, I'm combative right away. Yeah. Like, I had someone reach out to me not long ago, you know, can you DM me because I would like to get a comment? And the first thing I said to them was, hi there, how can I help you with your hit piece? Like that. You know, man, because I don't hold back, I don't trust any of them, they're serpents.
Man, it's crazy, dude. I don't know, like to this day I just find it weird, so I can only imagine how strange it must have been for you at the time. I mean, what was going on in your mind?
I was just thinking, if everything's over, I'm not going to be able to get a job.
Yeah.
You know, I already get fired. I was already trying to look for jobs. You know, I was just sitting thinking, I'm going to be on benefits for the rest of my life. Nowhere's going to want to hire me. I've actually got a friend who specializes in getting jobs for ex-cons, you know, people that have just been released from prison. You know, it helps them get jobs. Mm. And I was actually using that friend, like, can you try and find me a job? Because nowhere else wants to hire me. But then I was worried about that I was going to be working next to sex offenders or something like that. So that was, yeah, that didn't feel too great. But, you know, it ended up, just because I didn't have a job and then I was trying to get jobs, I just had a lot of free time, so I just focused on the channel.
Yeah.
And then I just sort of built up from there, and then the channel became my full-time job.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, good for you, man. I mean, you've got some quality content on there, which I want to talk about a little bit more in a second. I mean, what was the, and what was it like for everybody around you? What was it like for your girlfriend, your family?
You know? Girlfriend and mother. My dad was furious. My dad still has this huge grudge against the police and all that. Like, my dad's like, I can't believe they did this to you. I'm not going to say exactly what he said, but it was very powerful. But my mum and Sue, it's my wife now, but she, whenever it got brought up, the thought of me going to prison, you know, they would always get dead teary, very upset and all that. They were terrified because of the way the media went about it and the way that the courts and the cops are treating it, they kind of went, they're going to make an example of you, which basically meant, you know, I was going to prison. I was fully expecting to go to prison. So anytime it got brought up, they would get very, very, you know, Sue would cry a lot and everything. So yeah, that sucked.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I'm interested in. Cause it's like, you hear the story and you know, the wider thing, but I'm kind of like, man, how did that affect you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what was going on in there? It's easy as an outsider to watch it, and you know, some people would be like, oh haha, that's funny. Some people would be like, oh, that's messed up. Some people will be like, some weirdos will be like, oh, he deserves it, which, you know, I think they're crazy. But yeah, I just wonder how stuff like that directly affects the person and their family and everybody else, just, you know, especially people who know you, right?
Yeah.
So you'll have a newspaper or something on TV or something online or whatever come out and just completely mischaracterize someone. And that's somebody you know. And you're just like, no, like, that's not what they believe. That's not who they are. And it's the weirdest thing, because that's like your first introduction to the wider world. So the first thing they're seeing is that. And then, you know how the media operates, right? They'll try to they'll take a picture of you where you're looking like, where you're looking a bit angry, and they'll try to link it to this and link it to that, just so your brain sort of shortcuts and goes, well, maybe he is a Nazi, or maybe, you know.
By the way, I actually did notice that. Like, see, whenever I was outside the courthouse, right, I would always try and stand with my back to the reporters so that they couldn't get a picture of me. And this is the thing, is there was total silence, right, and I'm sitting there with a cigarette in my hand, total silence, and then as soon as I do that to take a draw of the cigarette, that's when you hear the cameras going off, and I'm like, you're actively trying to get a bad picture of me to make me look like a bad guy. You know what, man? Like, I was, and that's that was another lesson learned and all that, which is why I tried to, whenever I was approaching the courthouse, I went, smile and don't change your face. Just smile. So that's why in every picture I've got this big cheesy grin, like to try and look nice. You know what, man? Because I was like, as soon as I scowl or even if I'm about to sneeze, that's when they'll take the picture and that's the picture that they'll use.
Yeah, they always want the one where you're looking mean.
Yeah, exactly.
So the people's brains just go, well, he sort of looks like he could be, so.
He looks evil. He just looks mean. Yeah. And it's like, I was sneezing.
And so where is it all now? Has stuff been resolved? Are there still things that are open? Where is it now?
I went to court like 9 times before it was 9 days in court before we got a resolution, and lots of sketchy stuff like came for the prosecutors all the way through it. Eventually I got found guilty, and on the day that they were basically going to deliver my verdict, I said to my lawyer, there's a funny story about this, I sort of had a plan which I didn't tell my wife about. I said to my lawyer, I want you to read a message, because my lawyer gets a final statement, and I went, I want you to tell the judge, if he gives me a fine, I will not pay it. If he gives me community service, I will not do it. I'm going to refuse any punishment that he gives me. Mm-hmm. Can't exactly refuse jail. You know, you don't really get a choice. But my lawyer turned around and went like that. Yeah, okay then. You know, I'll do it. And my lawyer did read this out. And while I'm standing there in the dock, I can just feel my wife's gaze on the back of my head. And I'm sitting there. I'm not worried about the judge. I'm not worried about the sentence. I'm actually sitting there hoping to go to jail. Going like, don't send me home with her, because she's going to be mad. But ended up, the judge gave me an £800 fine anyway, like that. And then
being grossly offensive? What was the exact charge?
Posting a grossly offensive, you know, message on media onto social media. It was a section 127 of the Communications Act of 2003, which is basically, you know, posting something that someone finds offensive on the internet. And it's actually based on a really, really old law. I think it's the 1935 Royal Mail Act, which was basically there to stop people from sending rude telegrams.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a weird one. So, you know, dear head, stop. But like, yeah, that's what it was based on, and that's what I get found guilty of. But even though the problem was that gross offence is something that is completely subjective, you know, was it just bad luck? Because, you know, what you might find grossly offensive, I think is completely fine, and vice versa. So it is completely subjective. So I'm the main thing that I'm annoyed and worried about is that there is a law that exists that people can be convicted on and have their lives ruined for and even go to prison for that is based on absolute subjectivity. You know, it's not like another crime is a case of, you know, you either did or you didn't do it. It's black and white. But with this one, it's a case of how the person feels about your act decides whether or not that a crime has been committed. And that's very Stalin. Yeah, that, isn't it? Yeah.
And who is that person? I mean, millions of people saw it. I don't know what percentage were genuinely deeply offended by it. I mean, if something is viewed by 10 million people, say, then, you know, there's someone's going to find it.
According to the police, it's one.
Really?
All it takes is one person to make a complaint and the police get involved.
So one person made a complaint to the police and that was...
Oh, no. Funny thing is, no one made a complaint.
Really?
No one made a complaint to the police. The police decided to act on their own. And what they did was they then, when obviously we need to find, you know, a victim of the crime, so they actively went out and found a person who was offended. And it turns out that the person they found who appeared as a witness in my trial actively works with the police on these types of cases. So there was a little bit of a conflict of interest.
No way.
There. He's basically like, he's sort of like Captain Offended.
That's what he is.
He's just Captain Offended, and it's basically like he's, you know, shelling out his services, going like that. Do you need someone to be mad? I'm your guy. I'm always mad. I'm annoyed by everything. So that's who they went out and got. And some of the stuff he was trying to say at my trial was ridiculous. He tried to say that not only was the video offensive, but what I did counts as animal abuse. What? And I was, yeah, exactly. So if you teach your dog to, you know, sit, stay, roll over, you know, apparently that's animal abuse. I mean, it would have been animal abuse if I didn't give him his cookie. if I made him do the trick and didn't give him his treat, you know. But he spit out some woke, really, really woke hot takes during the trial.
Man, that's so weird. I mean, I grew up in Saudi Arabia, right? So I know that laws like that exist out there, but
thank God you got over here, man.
But in the UK, I was very, because I don't think I've ever seen somebody be prosecuted and found guilty of a joke before.
I'm the first person in Scotland. First person in Scotland. Yeah.
Has it happened in the UK at all?
It's happened to people, not for jokes. There's been a few other situations that happened after me. Well, in fact, no, there was one person. I don't know if you remember the Robin Hood Airport tweet.
Robin Hood Airport, I don't know.
There was a guy who, he tweeted out, I think he tried to go to Robin Hood Airport. It turned out the airport was closed. The guy tweeted out, like, you've got 2 days to get your act together or I'm going to blow the airport sky high. You know,
arrested. Even that is different, though.
Yeah, but like it's just an English thing. Sure, right? Yeah.
It's dumb, that one is more.
Post 9/11, it's pretty brave to post something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that can genuinely be, that is technically, even if it's a joke, that one is technically a threat or, you know, could be considered a threat to violence.
Yeah, but like he ended up getting charged, but loads and loads of comedians, you know, all the big names, you know, Stephen Fry, Al Murray, and funnily enough, Graham Linehan was one of the biggest pioneers in coming out and helping this guy. They set up a fundraiser, you know, to fund his appeal, all this stuff, and then ended up the guy's charges got dropped and he wasn't charged, which is good, that's fine. But then when I made my joke, these same people, not all, Stephen Fry, spoken support of me, but Al Murray and most of all Graham Linehan 180'd and were like, no, he deserves it, he deserves this, he deserves that. And I'm sort of like, come on guys, what changed with you in the last 6 years? But it's a case of, I was surprised too, but it seems that a lot of the mainstream comics have changed. You know, it went from, you know, you should be able to joke about anything to, oh no, there's certain things that you shouldn't be able to joke about.
Yeah.
And all that. Not all of them, you know, some of them are still very old school and go, no, everything's up for being joked about. But, you know, some of them have changed, sadly.
Yeah. No, but it's just, like you said already, I mean, it doesn't set a good precedent because, I don't know. I think there are certain things. We live in this weird time where it's like people go out of their way to remove the context and nuance from things and to misinterpret things purposely so that they can be offended.
Yeah. They actively seek it out.
Yeah.
They want to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really strange thing. It's like, you can tell, I don't know. I can't imagine anybody in their right mind seeing that video and reading into it that you are formulating some plan to reenact. You know what I mean? It's just like, you can clearly, you might not like the joke. You might think it's going too far. You might think it's crossing a line. You may be someone whose grandfather or whatnot actually suffered in the thing, so it hits a set. But still, you can be like, oh, that's stupid. You know, leave a dislike on the video and move on with your life. But for it to just get to go so far, it's strange. It's strange.
Through meaningful dialogue and guidance, Benign Images help storytellers of all types tell the stories they have a need to tell. Whether it's through simple editor services, consulting on story structure, or helping creatives to set up an effective work habit, Benign Images works with creators to help them become better storytellers. You can go check them out and start your project with them today by visiting their website, benignimages.com. That is BENIGN images.com. Go check them out. Become a better storyteller, whatever project you're working on. That's benignimages.com.
I think it's rooted in narcissism. It's people, sounds kind of mean to say, but see how you get all these people that have got all the different genders and all this type of stuff and a little bit of a victim complex. They seem to...
I'm one of them. I'm gender fluid.
Oh, nice. What are you right now?
Currently, I'm non-binary right now.
Non-binary?
Yeah.
good stuff, man. Let me know when you change. Yeah.
You just said man, which was not quite PC, but I'll let you off this time. You've already got a record, so I don't want to.
They're not going to, you know, bill me another £800. It's fine. You know, I make money now. I'll be all right. But like, I've noticed that it's people that have, you know, the all that type of stuff that sort of seem to crave attention. They like to be at the center of attention. And I think they've been so used to getting their way that, like, for example, me personally, if I'm in a room and there's 100 people and the comedian on stage is telling jokes that I really, really don't like, and I don't like the jokes and I'm offended or uncomfortable, I would just get up and leave and just go, it's not for me, and I would just leave.
Yeah.
But what these people would stand up and basically go, stop the show, everyone get out, kick him off the stage, ban him. And it's a case of, right, just because you don't like the content doesn't mean that you need to ruin the good time of all these other people, right? If you don't like it, you leave. Like, these are the type of people that won't make changes so that they can, you know, create the world in the way that they would like it. They want the world to change for them. And it's just...
You must have seen that meeting of the Democratic Socialists of America that went...
I still can't believe that's true. I can't... Like, I was watching it. Like, I was talking about it last night. When I was at the Fringe, there was a bunch of other comedy writers and all that were there. And we were talking about it and going, this is like something we wrote. Like, this is like... Has someone been peeking at our notepads? I'm like, what? It was this.
It was incredible. The whole day, I was sitting, I'd watched it in the morning, and then later on in the day, I just randomly started cracking up because I was just replaying the video in my head, and I'd just be sitting there reading a book and I'd just start laughing because I just playing in my voice. Please. Point of personal privilege.
Yeah, we've started doing that in Discord.
Location, pronouns. And then the way one person will say something and then the next person immediately like picks out something that they said. Please do not use gendered language.
Oh, no.
And these are the people who plan to overthrow capitalism. I'm just like, we'll just start clapping and you're done.
This is the thing, is if these people do eventually start the revolution, you know, the police aren't going to need riot shields and water cannons and tasers and tear gas and all that. One of them just has to shout something rude and just see the entire crowd just falling to the ground, you know, clutching their deep wounds. Police brutality. Those vowels bruised me.
Just clapping, misgender everybody. Watch them melt down.
It was that one guy, you know, complaining about his anxiety, going, I have really, really bad anxiety. Well, his anxiety didn't stop him from going up and chewing out a room of 100 people. Like, you know what I mean? And your anxiety can't be that bad.
it was just amazing. I still, there's a part of me that's still thinking, it must be an elaborate prank, but I know it's not.
that's the thing is, it was so ridiculous that it's totally plausible that it could be a prank and yet totally plausible that it could be real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? See if I found out it was a prank, I would go, I'm not surprised. It was that ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. But from what I'm seeing everywhere online, it was completely genuine.
Yeah. It's the same with certain accounts on Twitter. Some of them I'm thinking this must be a parody account. And then I look at it and I'm like, oh gosh, it's not. This is like a verified account that's, you know, tweeting along the lines of Titania McGrath. And
usually has HuffPo, BuzzFeed, yeah, all that in the bio. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them I'm like, how is this person, and it'll be editor of such and such or what? I don't know. So moving on, man. So in terms of your channel now, I see you've got a series on there called Mad Lads, where you're basically talking about crazy dudes throughout history. Some of them distant history, some of them more recently, who are just nutters basically. Yeah. So what inspired you to do that?
I just see, because it was free speech content that I was constantly making, I was never making free speech content that delivered good news.
Okay.
I was just going to, here's my free speech is screwed this week, and then next week it was just the same thing. I was getting absolutely blackpilled. I was getting to the point where none of this matters, everything sucks. Yeah. You know, man. So I went, okay, I'm going to veer off. I'm still absolutely free speech focused. I still, you know, speak out in support of freedom of speech, but I went, I'm going to do another type of content that I actually enjoy, you know, lifts my spirits a little bit, you know, makes this job a lot more fun. And that's when I decided to do Absolute Mad Lads, and I've loved it. It's one of the best things I've produced for my channel.
And how many of you, how many episodes have you done so far?
I don't remember. I think I've done 20.
About 20, okay. So I think I've seen about five of them. I saw the Gigi Allen one. That guy is a freaking nut job. I saw the that guy scares me. No, I know. Really, I read about that guy a few years ago. I was like, all right, this is actually scaring me. Like, this is just disturbing.
I mean, I like you know, if that's what musicians want to do, you know, leave musicians to do it. I mean, that's when you even get that. What's that type of rap that's around right now that's very violent? You know, people come after them all the time. What's it called? Drill rap, right? Yeah. That's it. Gigi Allen's the type of stuff that would even make drill rappers go, oh, no.
Yeah. Ain't nobody trying to poo on stage and fling it at their audience. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
I don't even... Oh, yeah. That guy was horrible. And then which other ones did I see? I saw the Killdozer one. I saw one that was about the a guy who was an executioner.
Oh yeah, Franz Schmidt. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. I saw the Chopper one. That was interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to check out more of them. It's that kind of macabre curiosity.
Yeah, I think that's why I like it. I'm trying to avoid doing people like serial killers and all that, just because they've been done to death, and there's nothing particularly exciting about them. I don't do mass shooters.
No.
Anything like that either, because screw them. Pretty much, it's either people that have done, even though if they've done stuff that's evil, see if they've done it for extraordinarily weird and stupid reasons. Like, I think it was, who was it? I can't remember if it was Nero or Caligula. He's in the list of mad lads. Even though he was an evil, twisted person, he did some really horrible things. He was a pretty brutal dictator, but there was a storm at sea that sank some of his fleet of ships. Mm-hmm. He got so angry that he got his armies to march to the ocean, and he declared war on the sea, and he got his soldiers to whip and stab the ocean. And like, and even, can you picture all these like Roman legions looking at each other going like, what the hell are we doing, man? Just shut up, he might hear you. Like that. So yeah, people like that, see if they've done stuff that's like, you know, absolutely crazy, then yeah, they get to be in Mad Lads. But if there's people that are just evil,
I get what you mean with a line, because you don't want to be coming across like you're glorifying or minimizing like truly completely evil, inexcusable stuff.
Yeah,
or like guys who are just crazy but not totally. Yeah, I don't know. I know what you mean though.
There's certain people who I will praise, like for example, Simo Haya, that was the White Death, the guy that basically fought against the Russians. You know,
who's that?
He was a sniper, he was a Finnish sniper, and he wore, you know, all white. His gun was painted white, he never used scopes, he only used iron sights, and he killed hundreds of the invading Russian communist forces that were trying to like take over Finland, and he was called the White Death.
Oh, wow,
you know, and so basically, I praise him because he's a war hero because he killed communists. I also praise Mad Jack Churchill, because he basically charged at Germans. He fought in World War II, and he literally charged at Germans with a sword. He brought a sword with him to fight and all that, and he brought a bow and arrow, and he brought bagpipes and everything, and you know, but he killed Nazis, so I'm going to glorify him as a hero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all that, you know, General Butt Naked, the guy that literally child soldiers who he used to sacrifice, you know, not so much, you know. I'll laugh at his crazy things, but I'm not going to glorify him.
I know. Here's the guy from Liberia, right?
Yeah. The entire Liberian civil conflict was, like, you could do an entire video on that, just on the names of some of the generals alone. For example, there was a general who was called General Mosquito. Okay. And he ended up destroying a village, and a guy from the village was so angry and rose up against him, and he changed his name to General Mosquito Spray. Like, you could do a whole video just on the names of some of these generals, man. Like, honestly.
So in terms of your YouTube channel and your sort of content and direction in general, what's the, I guess, what are you trying to put out there? You're just trying to entertain people, make people laugh? teach people new stuff? Like, what's the sort of, or are you just sort of freestyling it? I mean,
I'm kind of winging it just now. Like, I'm enjoying the content that I'm in just now, but I'm going to make other stuff. Like, I'm happy that I haven't had my channel pigeonholed. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm at the point where I could produce any type of content that I want, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I mean, I've got free rein to experiment. Like, I could even do, you know, small documentaries or something if I wanted, as long as I just sort of put my funny spin on it. Like, I've left my options very, very open, which is what I like. You know, I'm not restricted to anything. So, you know, my content, you know, 3 years from now, you might be completely different.
Yeah.
I just need to wait and see.
Okay. And are you performing stand-up as well? I saw you've done at least a couple of shows.
I've done a few shows. I do want to go further with that, yeah. Like, okay. I enjoy doing stand-up. It's just that the problem is, see, because a lot of my jokes are based in the sort of internet culture, mm-hmm. I was worried that, you know, see if I did it in front of people that use the internet. Like, for example, there's certain jokes that I've done at Sargon shows and everything that had, you know, everyone laughing. But see if I did the same jokes in front of, like, a normal, you know, comedy club mm-hmm. audience, it would just go right over their head. They wouldn't get the reference. So I do two types of comedy. I've got the types of comedy the stand-up that I do in front of an internet audience, and then I've got the stand-up that I do in front of a normie audience. Yeah. And I feel I fare so much better with the internet one. Because that's my jam, you know, that's the area that I like working in, but I do all right.
Okay. Have you ever thought of, I'm just actually thinking quite creatively here. I mean, have you thought of doing something like almost like an internet audience-based stand-up thing? I don't know, maybe some sort of live stream, or I don't know, so many people could even buy tickets too, so it's like a stand-up show, but for the online audience. I don't know, it's an idea.
I don't know, see, when you're doing it in front of, like, an actual live physical crowd, mm-hmm. like, I love that.
Yeah,
love that. It's brilliant. I don't think you could ever get any doing it on a live stream. Like, you know, the people at home might really enjoy it, but see if you're performing all these jokes to, like, a webcam like this, it just doesn't feel the same.
It's the same. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm a professional musician, so I've had people say, you know, suggest the similar idea to me. It's something I think I probably will try at some point, doing, like, a live concert but online, and maybe hire out a venue, get the right camera equipment and streaming different angles and something. I think maybe it's an idea for the future. I don't know, it's just something I was throwing out there. And how often how many live stand-up things have you done so far? Are you performing recently?
I've done four.
Okay.
Just now, because I don't actively go out and seek them. I wait until I'm asked, really, because my number one focus is my YouTube channel. Like, even last night as well, I was hanging out with Andrew Doyle.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, do you want to come down and do another show? And I was like, I'll do another show and all that. So, like, I don't actively go out and get it. They sort of just fall into my lap, like, a little bit. So, but I like it that way. It's fun.
That's good, man. Well, I mean, it's in my you know, in my view, huge kudos for being able to transform that spark, even if it was a sort of negative spark in a way, and turn that into something positive and a genuine long-term audience and fan base, because I think what happened to you would have just ruined a lot of people.
Yeah.
And
If I hadn't continued doing what I was doing and focused on YouTube and everything like that, I would have remained a little nobody with no platform, no voice, you know, no way of being able to properly publicly defend myself where people could actually hear it. You know, there's a lot of people that would still think, you know, that I was a, you know, tub-thumping Nazi.
Yeah.
You know, people would still have that opinion of me if I hadn't, you know, did what I did. So thankfully I went down this path
instead
of just giving up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the weirdest thing with the internet, is it can be
a blessing and a curse. What's that? A blessing and a curse.
Yeah. It's just weird how people can get catapulted into the mainstream in very bizarre ways. I mean, of course, with myself this year, I've multiplied my audience by, I don't know, fivefold, sixfold, tenfold this year.
You're doing very well.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you. You know, because I've been grinding for ages, right? I've been doing my music for over a decade, putting out music videos and albums and everything like that. And then I put out one stupid video of me doing a deadlift saying I identify as a woman.
this single tweet hits like, it did like 14 million impressions, got like 1.7 million views, got news coverage. It was suddenly on Fox News, Sky News, BBC. I was like, of all the things I've done, how is this what has brought all these eyeballs and people to what I'm doing? It's very strange.
Outrage culture gets you noticed.
It does.
Like, that's the problem. Like, yeah. The thing is, like, I get people calling at me all the time going, oh, you do this offensive thing and you do that offensive thing. And I'm like that. Yeah. And the more you complain about it, the bigger my audience grows.
Yeah.
Like that's what happens. You know, the news will put it up and go, look at this horrible man. He said a horrible, mean thing. But like the average person at home is going, he's quite funny.
That's quite, yeah.
I'm going to subscribe to his channel. I'm going to listen to his music.
Exactly.
That's
the thing. Cause it's like, if you have something else to offer, then, you know, that might draw people's attention first, but then it's like, oh, okay. All right. Now this guy's actually, he's interesting. I'll tell you who I think like no other person has done that is Jordan Peterson.
Oh,
I want to go back to the thing that initially catalyzed, you know, the whole Bill C-16 thing in Canada, where he just put up a webcam video on YouTube where he was complaining about it. And then people got outraged and started trying to mob him and tried to cancel him before canceling was really a verb in that sense. And it just completely backfired. And then so many people were, his lectures are fantastic. Oh, he's really interesting. And then
the guy's a millionaire now. He's a millionaire now.
multi-millionaire. Yeah. And it's just amazing that was the spark. If you think back to it, I mean, prior to that, he was just a university lecturer. He wasn't even a extremely well-known academic, known in Toronto, but certainly not. And now he's just, you know, doing these rock star tours, going around the country, selling millions of books.
Sells out everywhere he goes.
I know. Yeah. It's just amazing when you think that, man, like, the SJWs kind of created this guy.
But this is the thing that I have actually noticed, and that's true. Like, see, the people that are big on the scene right now wouldn't be big if it wasn't for them being outraged. But one thing that I've noticed is, see, on our side, you know, for example, if you make an offensive joke, well, again, right? Everyone from here, you know, people like Rogan will still talk to you, you know, I'll still talk to you, other people will still talk to you, everyone will interact with you, and like, you'll be fine. If someone on the far left does it, none of their friends want to talk to them anymore. Just happened to Sarah Silverman. Did you hear what happened to her?
I saw she's lost some job, but I have no idea of what the details are.
She was meant to be in a movie and she ended up getting dropped, and a lot of people aren't defending her, and it was because of a skit that she did back in 2007 where she wore blackface.
2007?
Yes, 2007, so 12, 13 years ago.
Man.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to punish people for stupid stuff that we did when we were younger, then everyone's cancelled.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
They're all going to have to cancel each other eventually. I mean, I don't know how you... I'm so glad I've never been a part of or chased after that crowd.
Yeah.
I just feel like you'd just be walking on eggshells constantly. Just constantly, and it would just get tiring. I mean, just constantly trying to not offend this person.
Point of personal privilege.
You know what I mean? It's just like, dude, seriously, like, if you're gonna cancel me because I said he when I was supposed to say they, or I'm just like, dude, stop. Just it's so authoritarian. That's why it's so funny, because a lot of these people call themselves liberals, and it's so illiberal. I'm like, this is. Like, again, I said, I grew up in Saudi Arabia where you've got certain blasphemy laws and stuff like that. And, you know, and so it's like, in that regard, I'm kind of used to it. But I'm like, you're sort of claiming to be the opposite, but you're just doing the same thing with different words and different boundaries and different groups. But it's just the same.
Yeah, they are authoritarians. Like, you are getting people that are like the old school left. Like, see how like the hippies from the 60s. Peace and love, man. Just let people do what they want. You know, if you don't like it, don't associate with them. That's fine.
That's so right.
literally Hitler. Literally Hitler.
That's free speech? How damn.
Yeah, imagine letting people just, you know, say what they want, you know. It's 2019. We can't have that.
Oh, man. That's crazy, dude. So have you got anything else coming up that's interesting or exciting or that you want to plug?
I'm actually going to America in 2 days.
Okay.
I'm speaking at the Men's Rights Conference. I'm just going to meet up with people, do a few events. I'm doing Minds IRL in New Jersey as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think I saw something about that.
It's going to be good, you know, because it's an actual debate. You know, you're not just sitting there with people you agree with. They actually put counter voices on, which I'm a little bit worried about because I'm pretty bad with no filter. You know, see how as you're typing a tweet, you can turn around and go, nah, I'm just going to backspace that. Or if you're doing a video, you can just edit the clip out. Yeah. See if you're on stage with no filter and no way of saving yourself. I've done it where I've made jokes, and as soon as I've made the joke, I've went, oh, it's like, there's no taking that back now. So I'm a little bit worried, but okay. I should be okay.
Well, you know, if you, I don't know, maybe by doing that, you'll kind of be proving some of your own points.
Yeah, well, this is America. You know, I'm not going to get arrested for it. Yeah.
you'll be safer over there. That's the funny thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's actually nuts. Yeah. You can crack a joke in one place and it's legal, and in the next place it's illegal.
And that was Constantine that made an amazing point in his show. He turned around and said, do you know that in Russia, 300 people last year were arrested for things that they said on social media? And the audience was like, oh, boo, 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 boo. And he's like, yeah, I know, that's crazy, isn't it? In the UK last year, it was 3,000. And people were shocked. And it's sort of like, yeah, things really are that bad. Like, yeah. See, whenever you hear it in places like Russia and Saudi Arabia, you would go, oh, of course, what happened there? But in Britain, like, I don't know, like, I've been waving this big red flag for, like, 3 years now, and it's sort of like, is anyone paying attention yet? Like, we are turning into a regime. We are turning into a regime. This is the type of, that's why whenever I see the media going, oh, can you believe that Erdogan arrested journalists? And I'm like, ah, look at you. You literally support people getting arrested for tweets and things that they say. And all that, man, this is the thing I don't understand. Erdogan, you know, he's arresting journalists, oh, wow, wow, wow. And then, literally the next day, the newspapers were like, oh, Assange, screw him.
Yeah, yeah. Blind spots in hypocrisy are very rife amongst human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome, man. And what's your YouTube channel so that people can find you and subscribe?
Count Dankula. You can watch and subscribe for as long as YouTube allows it to be there.
Awesome. Oh, actually, I do have one more question I did want to ask. It's just come back to me. Throughout that whole thing, was it ever deemed that that video violated any of the guidelines of any of the social networks or websites that it was on? Did YouTube, for example, have a problem with it or no?
No, YouTube actually defended it. Wow. YouTube actually said that it's clearly intended as a joke. So I don't know. Obviously, YouTube have changed a lot in the last few years. So I don't know if I was just lucky that the person reviewing the case looked at it and was a reasonable and sensible person and went, this is clearly a joke. No, taking it down. But it's obviously been demonetized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not hard to have that happen to you. No, YouTube,
that one I get. But because I was just wondering, I was like, did it actually violate any of their policies? Or that's quite amazing, because you'd think that if something doesn't violate the policies, then almost by default, then surely it doesn't violate the law.
You would think that.
Yeah, you think YouTube would be, you know, YouTube would be stricter than the law is in that regard.
Yeah, it was weird. It's weird that YouTube, and we all know what YouTube's like, isn't as strict as the British police.
Well, there you go, everybody. You've got a warning. So, make sure you be wary out there. Be careful what you say. And
We're listening.
Yeah, Big Brother is watching. I'm looking out my window right now, kind of. Awesome, man. Marcus, so good to have you on the podcast, bro. It's been great talking to you and getting to know you a little more, man.
Thanks very much, man. It was a good chat. Thanks for having me on. I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Like a bang, click and a bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name. This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping.
So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.